So, Don, I have to say, you were up again all night, and it makes me wonder, what did I miss out there? Why are you spending all of your sleep, all these sleepless nights?
The markets are alive. The election is out of the way. It's behind us. And now the markets, I think, are coming back to the way they should be and have been waiting for this uncertainty to get out of the way. So I think the last time we spoke, and thank you for having me back on the show. I do appreciate it. But the last time we spoke, I think I used the analogy of the markets are like an amoeba. You know, a single-cell organism that sort of moves one direction and then sort of moves another. And those movements are caused by factors in the market that drive it. And that amoeba is moving in every direction you can think of right now because all of the markets are alive. If you look at commodities, if you look at equities, if you look at the debt market, everything's moving out there right now. And it's because we had this uncertainty, this election in the U.S., and now that's old news, past history. And now the market's refreshed. It can sit there and move capital, and it can start to look forward again.
What's doing good? What's doing bad?
The U.S. is doing great across the board. Interest rates are up a little bit, but the equity market's flying. I think we're producing jobs here in this country. I think we've got some growth going on in this country. And what I always do is I compare the U.S. to other countries that are out there. And as I look around the globe and I say, if I had some money to invest, where would I put it? It comes right back here to the U.S. And I really think that the U.S. is in a prime position to sit there for the next 10 years and have very, very strong economic growth, again, be a market leader. And as usual, it will pull the other countries up along with it. Overnight, you know, you saw the equity markets around the globe do very, very well because the U.S. is, you know, making new highs in equities. And I think it's going to we're going to get back to the 80s where the U.S. sort of led the way. The other countries followed. And I think all that investment money is going to be flowing right into here.
Well, I've been excited to have you back to ask you this question, because one of the things that sort of irks me every morning is when I hear people say this is the Donald Trump fueled rally. It really isn't. I mean, it's no matter who won the election, we would see movement, right?
Completely agree. The markets were in gridlock, and all of this argument was going on, arguing whether it's Democrats, Republicans, Hillary, Donald, what's it mean, and just a really nasty, nasty, contentious election. And I think that seized the markets. I think it locked them up. And, you know, this is not a Donald Trump rally, you know, any more than it is anything else. It is a rally of this unknown is behind us. And it didn't matter if Hillary was elected. It didn't matter if Donald Trump was elected. It's this unknown is behind us now. And we'll see what happens as we go forward. But it just it freed up and released all of this capital to start moving around again.
And I certainly don't want to minimize Donald Trump's impact on stuff, because we saw this with Boeing this week, where there one little tweet lost Boeing about 1.5% in about an hour.
Right.
So there's a little bit of gravitas there.
Sure, absolutely. Well, a $4 billion aircraft will do that. Yeah. And but you're right. I mean, information moves so quickly now in the market, and the market just looks to absorb any type of news that it can, and try to translate into what does that mean for value? What does that mean for value? And sometimes, especially coming out of quiet periods and periods of uncertainty that we've been in, you're going to see knee-jerk reactions and you're going to see hyper moves one way or the other. The markets will settle down. It's like dropping a rock into a still pond. Those echoes will go out. But as time goes on, they diminish. They get quieter and quieter. So the market will revert back to a normal trading range. But it's fun right now. It's sort of like the Wild West going on.
The last time you were in, we were talking about the sort of electronic curbs that were put in place, some of the things that have been done institutionally to stop some bad news from having a real bad effect. But I'm interested in your take on whether or not politicians like Donald Trump have some responsibility to, instead of sending a tweet that could hurt a company like as happened with Boeing, what responsibility do big power players like that have?
Huge responsibility as far as I'm concerned. And if any politician isn't aware of that, especially at that level, at a federal level and a global level like he plays at, he will be, you know, quick enough that the world will cling to every word he says, and they will dissect what he says more than they do when the Fed releases statements. And they look at Fed speak and, you know, all the Fed wording to everything. That's what he's in for, and that's what, you know, his cabinet will be in for. And it's just the news cycle and the way the media is now. Information is disseminated so quickly, and it's so thorough as far as what is said and captured, and moves around the globe at lightning speed. And you can take just little bits of that and push it out, and it's going to have huge global impacts. So, expect that to be dialed down, tempered down, but he'll get that. You know, it's refreshing because it's creating a lot of volatility, sure. And I like that. But I think, we're sort of in that window, and that'll all start to smooth out as time goes on.
Let's talk a little bit about the various commodities. And with oil, first of all,
sure.
We've seen oil since the election really go up, but there's still that volatility there because we don't know what's going to happen with OPEC and this, they slash production, but
sure.
There's still this glut.
Yep.
$60 a barrel, is that possible?
Sure, it's possible. We are trading right now as far as oil goes, on the OPEC, news. They're going to cut production. But how many times have they said that over the past 10 years? And how many times has oil production really been cut for any significant or lengthy period of time? The market's going to overreact first, which it has. It has reacted. But right now it's sort of like, let's see if they're going to follow through with what everybody's talking about. You've already have Iran, who's saying, nope, we're not going to sit there and look at this. Oil production, we're still hurting from the sanctions that were placed in us, so we're not going to cut back our production. So you're already seeing Indonesia, you're already seeing them bow out. We'll see if they can hold it together. Production, oil production is the highest it's been. Saudi Arabia is just producing oil, hand over fist. If you take a look at their monthly productions, not sure they're going to cut it back too much, to be honest with you. So
yes.
To me, it's a sell. I mean, this rally that's going on, it's a good place to sell.
Yesterday, we had the president of the Illinois Farm Bureau on. They're having their annual meeting, and he said farmers across the board are just concerned about commodity prices. We had this wonderful crop this year. The harvest was really strong, but commodity prices are not where they need to be. Is that going to turn around at all any soon?
Good question. Look at the weather. Forecast the weather out there right now, and I think that's where you're going to have the commodity prices go. So, when it comes to the grains and when it comes to that, I'll leave that to those market experts that dwell in those markets and those specific markets when it comes to grains. At Associated Bank, we're not involved in the grains. We're a customer-led strategy, so it's foreign exchange, interest rates, and commodities, oil, natural gas, those types of commodities. Not the grains.
You talked earlier about how this is going to be good for the U.S. as we move forward.
Yeah.
We saw a little bit of that already. The head of Sprint, the Japanese company that owns Sprint, says $50 billion in the U.S., 50,000 jobs. Is that the kind of investment we're going to be seeing, these big chunks of? I mean, that's a pretty good get.
I think that's the value that a Donald Trump or a businessman is going to bring to this. I think he is going to be out there soliciting business and pulling that into the states and doing what's best for the country, job creation. And, we'll have to listen to him, patting himself on the back as he does it. But that's OK. I mean, it's pulling business back into the U.S. And I'd rather do that than set up a ton of tariffs, to approach it in a negative light.
Sure.
Let's approach it in a positive light.
Well, and the other possibility exists is that we'll see these tariffs and the tearing up of these trade agreements. As somebody who has their fingers on the globe, how deadly or damaging would that be if we started ripping up these trade agreements?
Huge. Very damaging. I mean, especially if you're in the position that the U.S. is breaking out, it's coming back, and it's going to lead the globe. The last thing we need, is to sit there and have a ton of tariffs. If you're looking at a tariff of 45% on imported Chinese goods because they're viewed as a currency manipulator, that's not a good thing. Anytime that you create obstacles to trade, but it's got to work both ways, that's not a good thing. It is sort of lopsided, the last thing you want to do is to escalate that and get into some type of a trade war that is going to be a drag on the global rebound that could occur, and with the U.S. leading it. So I would much rather approach it from a very positive light than from a negative light.
Because it is a two-way street. We want as much to bring stuff here, but
sure.
Also if we don't send stuff elsewhere, we're not going to succeed.
Exactly. Again, it's all about job creation here. And I think with the businessman at the helm, I think you're going to he's going to bring that angle in his term, you know, as running his administration. He's going to bring that where it's going to be this. Let's approach it from business, from a logical business position and get the economy going again. I mean, I really think that that's going to be a benefit from it. You know, he's got some other things he's got to work on, but, you know, I'll give him A pluses on that.
He also wants to remove some regulations. We've talked with some of your colleagues in recent weeks about the Dodd-Frank Act being pulled back a little. There's also some rulemaking regulatory issues involving commodities futures trading.
Right. Yeah. Think of these markets, you know, I always go back, you know, 2,000 years. And if you think of the marketplace 2,000 years ago, you know, Roman times, you know, you sort of had the open marketplace and you had an area for grains and an area for maybe the silks and the materials and the satins. And you had this over here for pottery. And the markets that are traded around the world are very similar to that, except unlike 2,000 years ago, they're spread out all over the place. Mm-hmm. But you still go to these exchanges and you go to these markets and they specialize in a handful of things here and there. But some markets are very large, some markets are very small, and some markets have many, many players, and some markets have very few players, some very large players, a handful of large players, and a lot of smaller players. Those regulations around the commodity industry that you were talking about there, I think those are geared and aimed at those markets where you have few large players that can really lock the market up if they have to. Now, if you take a look at the foreign exchange market, which is the largest market in the world, if you look at our debt market, you know, you have a lot of players that are in there, a lot of large players are in there. So a regulation like that is good. We want to keep the price action going. We want liquidity to go. And if you're dealing with markets that have large players but not a whole lot of them, it's very easy to polarize that market. You know, one guy gets very long, one guy gets very short, and you know what? They just stand and they look at each other. And everybody else who wants to participate in it, they want the price action, they want the liquidity, and they don't get it. So that's going to break that up. Not really applicable to certain markets, mm-hmm. but is applicable to some.
So sort of like a logjam that's going to get busted up.
But Dodd-Frank, you know, a knee-jerk reaction again. Mm-hmm. You know, there's been a lot of regulations that have been written around Dodd-Frank that have gone out there. And quite honestly, as somebody on this side of the business that sort of sees it at a street level, you know, we read these things. And we look for guidance. Okay, how are we going to apply these regulations? And what we get back is, well, that's how you define it. Well, okay, how I define it can be different from how a lot of other people define it. And there's a lot of talk at that street level. How are you approaching this? How are you interpreting this? And that's good and that's healthy, but it's not going to create clarity anytime soon. We'll eventually get there, but it creates a lot of energy and a lot of attention focused on things like defining regulation and what's everyone doing, as opposed to, you know, creating value in the market and servicing customers and tending to positions or whatnot. So a lot of money is being spent there. I can really see those regulations starting to get called out a little bit. What's important? What's not important? And maybe there's been an overreaction or sort of throwing regulations on a board to see what sticks, to see how the market reacts and sort of vet through what's important and what's not.
It almost creates sort of a paralysis in many ways and keeps banks, other people from moving forward, as you've been talking about here today.
Costs a lot of money. Yeah. And banks, financial institutions that are facing regulation, spending a lot of money on this. And at the end of the day, that gets passed along to the consumer at the very end. You know, I always look at things and I'm going to steal something from a friend of mine who's he's in academia, he's a double PhD, and he's been in the capital markets before. He sort of works both sides of it. But he talks about complex issues and complicated issues. And they're two very different things. And if you look at a complicated issue, a complicated issue would be something like we're going to shoot a rocket to the moon. And there's 100,000 moving parts in that. But we know those 100,000 moving parts. We can measure them. We can calculate what they are. We know how much thrust the rocket needs. We know how fast it needs to go to escape the gravity. We can all calculate these things. Complex issues are like trying to raise your teenage daughters. What works at 9 o'clock in the morning to get them to do homework, for example, doesn't work at 9 o'clock at night. And you sit back and you say, well, why? You know, how did that happen? And that's what the market is like. Again, if you're driving down the highway and you see a flock of birds, and you were talking thousands of birds, and just how they move, you know, they'll move to the left, they'll move to the right, and it's all this fluid ball of birds that move around. And those are complex issues. You don't know which direction they're going to go, and that's the market. But yet we have regulation, which is trying to interpret complex issues and apply complicated formulas. You can't put it in a box. And I think when it comes to regulation, that's what's getting vetted out right now. What can we sit there and say, these are complicated issues, and we can put them in a box, we can measure them, and your output's always going to be the same. And what are these complex issues where you can't model this flock of birds flying around? You know, which way is it going to turn? You can't model that with any accuracy. So I think the regulations are the regulators are trying to get through that on what's complicated and what's complex. So it's going
to
be a while.
So what would be under your Christmas trading screens as a wish? What would you like Santa to bring you for Christmas under the trading screens? Anything that we need that...
World peace, yeah. Happiness, nice bonus at the end of the year,
right.
Maybe. No, I don't know.
More green than red on the
screen. More green than red, more on the screen going up. I would just like to see the markets... You know, interacting, working together, and you know, it's really the only industry out there that can sit there and try to put each other out of work all day long, and then go out and grab a beer at the end of the day and have a little giggle about what happened during the day. And so, you know, just that kind of camaraderie, that's what I'd like to see.
Peace, prosperity, and a good beer.
Exactly.
Sounds good. Have a wonderful holiday, and we'll see you after the new year.
Steve, thank you. Same to you.